Did you piss off the wrong people when you started doing a construction on Jacob K. Jarvis Convention Center? Well, today we're going to go over the Westies, an Italian mafia gang from the 1970s.
We here at Angry Me Production want to thank our sponsor, Mobile Notary Mindy. She's certified with the National Notary Association. She's also bonded and E&O insured. She offers a wide range of services, including wills, powers of attorney, medical documents, healthcare proxies, living wills, certification of trust, assignment of personal property, HIPAA waivers, advanced healthcare directives, and 99 verification. You can find her on Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram at Mobile Notary Mindy. You can also visit her webpage at TexasMobileNotaryMindy.com. That's TXMobileNotaryMindy.com. Thank you so much, and enjoy the show.
Ladies and gentlemen of all ages, boys and girls, thank you for tuning in to yet another episode of Angry Me Production. We appreciate you coming in and letting us be a part of your lives. Week in and week out. We hope to do our best to present you with something that your eardrums delight in. Whether you're looking at us on YouTube or Rumble, or listening to us on Spotify, Google, or Anchor, or any of the other podcast services that we are currently on or trying to get on, we thank you. And if you don't mind, at the end of every episode, stop by, leave us a comment, leave us a like. If it asks for 5 stars, we'll take 5 stars, even if you don't like us. 5 stars are what it's all about. With that being said, we hope you enjoy our attempt to make our advocation our vocation. Ladies and gentlemen, let the games begin.
Welcome, Angry Faithful. Yeah, that's right. I'm here with that guy, KD, a friend of mine. We've been missing a couple of months with him because, well, he's been busy. That's what happens with life.
Most of the time.
But yeah, we're going to go over the Westies.
What's better than an Irish mob?
I don't know what's better than an Irish mob.
I wonder who was worse, the Irish or the Italians? Probably the Irish.
That's actually a good question. I never, because when it comes to like mafioso and everything like that, and I've talked to you about this a while ago, was the reason why they're called families and everything is because they pull their money together, and they basically create like a big family pot where everybody puts in a little bit at a time from whatever job they're working or whatever jobs they actually make. And they make businesses from that, which is a good idea. But that's where
what I want to do with my kids.
Yeah.
Seems
yeah.
Like I mean, about the only way a guy could do something now without an ornament amount of cash at hand.
Yeah. I mean, it works out as a, like I said, a lot of, and it's not just the Italians, a lot of Middle Eastern and Asian people still have that practice and everything. Even like I said, even with the Italians, but if you have it all comes from like old farm working, working and everything. I mean, you work on a farm, you still get a little bit of money, but the big chunk goes for the farm.
Right. So,
but there are many people that controlled the Westies, and it's still a little bit active today, just small amounts. But their activities were as racketeering, assault, burglary, kidnapping, illegal gambling, fraud, extortion, drug trafficking, counterfeiting, robbery, and murder. But it all stemmed from Mickey Spillane stepped into power vacuum that existed in the Hell's Kitchen since gang leaders fled the area in 1950 to avoid prosecution. A mobster from Queens named Hughie McGlone had been running Hell's Kitchen. Spillane, a native, was his apprentice until assuming leadership. Spillane sent flowers to neighbors in the hospital, and he provided turkeys and to the needy families during Thanksgiving. In addition to running gambling enterprises such as bookmaking policies, accompanying an innovation inevitably by loan sharking. Loan sharking led to assault, and Spillane had burglary arrests as well. However, among all of his criminal activities, most associated was his snatch racket, kidnapping the local local businessmen and members other than and other crime members for ransom. He was also able to add in his neighborhood prominence by marrying Marine Mechanis, a daughter of the prestigious Mechanis family, which run the Midtown Democratic Club since 1905. The union of political power with the criminal activities enhanced the gang ability to control union job and later and labor racketeering, moving away from declining waterfronts and more strongly into construction jobs and service work at the New York Coliseum, Madison Square Garden, and later the Jacob K. Jarvis Convention Center. That's where it actually stemmed to a Irish-Italian war, which it was all for the building of the Jacob K. Jarvis Convention Center. Since the convention center was located in Spillane's Hell Kitchen neighborhood, Spillane refused to allow any involvement by the Italians. Although the Italian gangs greatly outnumbered the Irish mob, Spillane was successful in keeping control of the convention center and Hell's Kitchen. The Italians, frustrated and embarrassed, respond by hiring a rogue Irish-American hitman man named Joseph Magdalene Sullivan to assassinate Tommy Devine, Eddie the Butcher Kalminsky, and Tommy the Greek Capotos, three of Spillane's top lieutenants. That's one strange thing about that time frame. And even nowadays, what a lot of people don't understand about Northern unions is they're still controlled by the mob. Mm. And you still have the wet whistles for
a wet whistle.
Yeah. You never wet anybody's whistle.
I've heard people say, "I'm going to wet my whistle." I've never heard that as a term other than that.
Really?
Yeah.
It's just I guess the term is more or less one of those things that you just, wet the palate. I mean, there's a lot of terms of terms for bribery. But no, it's just hilarious because even with Trump and Trump going into office the first time, hopefully the second, it's so funny because everybody's like, oh, he had dealings with the mob. It was like, it's New York, it's gonna happen. You have to do that, or the construction won't happen. I mean, many a times they've been from the 80s and stuff. John Gotti controlled most of the stuff during the 80s. And you had to deal with it.
I'm reading here that they teamed up with the Gambino family.
Eventually.
It says law enforcement's hold the Westies responsible for more than 30 murders during the last 15 years. This is the most violent gang we've seen until recently. Until recently has largely terrorized the insular world of Manhattan's West Side docks, living off of extortion from bookmakers and loan sharks. Westies never gained notoriety of the mafia, but in recent years have attracted increasing scrutiny from law enforcement. Over the last decade, Westies have cemented an alliance with the far more sophisticated and far more powerful Gambino family of the Mafia. During that time, officials charged gang members performed executions at the behest of the Gambinos and shared profits from the mob traditional control over New York's docks.
Yeah. But
they appear to be collapsing under the weight of a series of fratricides and bitterness of Mickey Featherstone. Who the hell is Mickey Featherstone?
Yeah, we'll get into that. But in 1970s, Spillane was assassinated by Roy Domino, which we went over last weekend, in a hit set up by Jenny Colin, who wanted to take over from Spillane. Colin recruited the infamous Domino after a deal was struck between the two. By rubbing out Spillane, Spillane, I'm probably saying this wrong, Stephen Hawking from the grave.
Spillane.
Domino's crew would then do business with his successor. Domino initially came into contact with Conan after the latter had murdered and dismembered the loan shark, Ruby Stein. Yeah. Domino was one of those. He was a serial killer, but he worked for the mob, so he technically wasn't a serial killer, I guess.
You ever, isn't it you do more than five, they, or three to five, they consider you a serial killer?
He did about 60 to 70.
That's, he qualifies.
Yeah.
Do you qualify even as a, like, the guy flipping the switch? Would that label you a serial killer?
You know, I always wondered. Well, okay. There is, I can't remember the movie, but it was a movie about the guy that was the executioner for the Nazis back in after the World War II. He was specifically chosen to do this job. And the way they portrayed him in this movie was he was basically doing his job. He would, you know, set everything up, pull the leather, and they get hanged. And I guess if it's one of those things, if you're paid by the government, are you? That is a good question. Because what about like those people that are, you know,
torturing? The government's a mob. So if you're being paid by the mob to kill people, you're no different than being paid by the government to kill people. So if he's a hitman, the other guy's a hitman. I mean, not a hitman. Well, I guess you could call him that. Executioner, yeah. Would be a serial killer.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, the definition of serial killer is more or less you have to have like a specific type. If they're all criminals, you have a specific type.
They're all in jail and they're all sentenced to death.
They're all criminals, or are they all like they all wronged you somehow, I guess. I mean, that's a good philosophical question.
I mean, people that Jeffrey Dahmer went after didn't wrong him. He just had a preference.
Yeah.
So, you know?
Yeah, I guess like a lot of the ones that, but what if you like, I mean, was Hitler a mass murderer, or was he like a big time serial killer? He just
did Hitler kill any of the people himself?
No, he ordered it. So
what's the difference? So I mean, having somebody killed and killing somebody doesn't necessarily, I don't know how that would fit into serial killers and executioners.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good philosophical question on that. I mean, we could debate that real quick. I mean, that because look
up definitions of words.
Well, the executioner is a person that kills on authority of a higher authority, like a king or a government or judge. But, you know, a serial killer does the stuff himself. He picks the person, he studies them, or just grabs them and does what hateful things he has. And, oh, man. I guess it's more or less one of those things as if you enjoy it or not. Because Roy DeMito actually enjoyed it. There's a couple of killings that he did that he didn't enjoy, but, you know, he did enjoy the killings. It's I guess it's just an emotional thing after that for, like, a suicide. But if an executioner enjoys, you know, throwing the switch, which in some cases there's people out there that do enjoy doing that. So I guess he would consider himself a killer, a serial killer, you know? So let's go on. The war began for the Spillane-Clone Wars when an 18-year-old Colin swore revenge against Spillane following the Spillane initial kidnapping and pistol-whipping of Clone's father. In 1966, Colin fired a machine gun at Spillane and his associates from the top of Hell's Kitchen's tenement building. Although Colin's wounded no one... This is the reason why you don't spray and pray. He didn't wound one person. Spillane understood that the younger hoodlum was not to be taken lightly, and Spillane went to Colin's father, slapped him around, told him to get his son under control. Colin was in prison for the short period for murder and kidnapping charges that were pleaded down to Class C manslaughter. He was released in 1971 and continued his war against the West East Gang. I mean, eventually he killed him with the help with Roy DeMito in 1977. See, I don't know. This is the reason why I don't like some of the places that we get our stuff from, because a lot of the times they don't do it chronologically at times. Troubles with the... I'm going to have to, Stephen Hawking, from the grave, please help me out with this name.
Javanese
family. Hell's Kitchen was no longer, what was that?
So that sounds fun.
What?
His name.
Genovese. I think it's Genovese. Let's go it again. Stephen Hawking, from the grave.
Genovese.
Hell's Kitchen was no longer safe family, and he moved to a then Irish working class neighborhood of the Woodside, Queens. When Spillane gone, his control of the rackets in the Hell's Kitchen began to deteriorate. Colin became neighborhood boss. Through some still viewed Spillane as boss on the New York Commission, Spillane was still viewed as the Iron Mob boss on the west side, putting the Javis Convention Center construction under his control. And Anthony, I try not to eat for like 30 minutes before I do the cast, but I ended up still getting gassy. This is kind of upsetting. Anthony's
Salerno.
Yeah, Salerno. A high-ranking member of the Javino's crime family wanted the convention center for himself and reached an agreement with Jimmy Colin. If Jimmy Colin became boss, Salerno would run the construction site and gave Colin a taste of the proceeds. Serrano reached out to Buffalo crime family associate and freelance hitman Joseph Sullivan to eliminate three of the Spillane supporters in Hell Kitchen. Tommy Devine. There's a lot of Toms on this. Tom Devlini, Tom Capasios and Edward Chudnitsky apparently switched sides to the Colin camp after the both they both killed and dismembered Patrick Patty Duncan for killing Kaminsky's best friend. But Sereno and Sullivan were not aware of the switch. Davini and Kamling were killed in late 1976, and Capatos was killed in January 1977. Spleen was out of the picture, and Colin was the undisputed boss of Hell's Kitchen. It was felt that Spleen had to die. Roy DeMino, a Columbo Gambino, a crime family soldier, murdered Spleen as a favor to Cologne. Mickey Featherston stood trial for the murder and was found not guilty. But during the late 1970s, Cologne tightens the elite alliance between the Westies and Gambinos, then running by Paul Castiglione. Conan main contract was contact with Roy DeMino. In 1979, both Colin and Featherstrom would require the of the acquitted the murders of a bartender, Harold Whitehead, another Westie and top enforcer, James McElroy. Is that McElroy?
If I could read with you, I'd help, man.
That's why I have Stephen Hawking's. Dang it. And I just... Hold on real quick. But James McElroy was acquitted of the murder of a teenager in 1980, along with both Westies leaders, were imprisoned in 1980. Colin on gun possession charges and Featherstone on counterfeiting rap and gambling, loan sharking, union shakedowns continued on the West Side. After DeMino himself was murdered, Colin's Gambino connection became Daniel
Marino,
a capo from Brooklyn. Colin eventually interacted directly with John Gotti, who took over the Gambino after Castillo's murder in December 1985. Gotti appointed Joe Watts as his liaisons to the Westies. From time to time, the Westies worked for the Gambinos as contract killers. Squad. Featherstone was convicted of murder in the early 1986 and began cooperating with the government in the hopes of getting his conviction overturned. And became and because he believed that the rest of the Webbies had framed him for the murder, the information he and his wife Sissy's provided and the recordings they helped make achieved this aim. And September 1986, the prosecutor who oversaw Featherston's conviction told the pressing judge that post-conviction investigations had revealed that Featherstone was innocent. The judge overturned the verdict at the point the information provided by the Featherstones resulted in the arrest of Conan and the several other Westies on the state charges of murder and other crimes. Shortly after, federal prosecutor Rudolph Giuliani announced a devastating RICO indictment against Conan and the other criminals' activities going back to 20 years. Featherstone testified in open court for the 4 weeks in the trial that began in September 1987 and concluded with major convictions in 1988. Conan was sentenced to 60 years in prison on associated charges. Others leading gang members were also sentenced with a long prison term, including McElroy, who was sentenced to 60 years, and Richard Magsy Ritter, a career criminal, sentenced to 40 years on loan sharking and drug-related charges.
How come they can go to jail for loan sharking, but loan sharks can't? I mean, they charge fucking ridiculous interest rates. I mean, they don't go around break your legs, but you know, those title loan places, they're a bunch of fucking crooks.
Oh yeah. They have, it's the reason why is because they go through a process for with the government and pay taxes. Actual loan sharks don't most of the time. Well, they get their all, money. That is the biggest deal. And you're absolutely right. I mean,
if you just pay taxes on your illegal activities, you're good to go.
Yeah. And there was actually some stuff that was supposed to go through Congress a couple of years back that I read that they were trying to get it to where the interest rates on those title loans, I guess is the best way to actually say, but the title loan things, they were trying to get it down to where they could only charge like 17 to 18%, which they've charged like sometimes like 50%.
They get fucking out there.
Yeah.
Your credit cards, motherfuckers, charge 27% or more, 48%, yeah. You know, if you got a variable interest.
I think on any kind of loan I ever got, was actually a loan from my bank that was the cheapest, and that was like 9%. That was a reasonable amount.
There's no reason a person should pay more than 20% for any cost.
Yeah, 17 to 18 would be it's profitable, but
oh, I mean, 17 to 18 is ridiculous. Even if you got no money, you know, like if you're desperate, 20% is ridiculous.
Yeah. No, you're right on that. I mean,
but you can't fix it. You want to see the root of all evil.
Yeah. By the early 1990s, the old demographic for Hell's Kitchen neighborhood was disappeared. The blue collar Irish American community was being dispatched by a more affluent.
Being displaced by a more affluent and ethnically diverse group of residents.
Oh, okay. With this change came a decrease in street crime and a change of leadership. And I am going to have to Stephen Hawking this because there's no way I could say this.
Bosco Radonjic.
Associate of Jimmy Colon in 1983, became the boss of the Westies when Kelly went on the lam and was instrumental in the fixing of John Gotti's 1986 racketeering charge. After 1992, yeah, I'm not even going to Bosco. Fled the country to avoid jury tampering charges. He was eventually arrested by a U.S. Customs official during a stopover in Miami, Florida in 1990. However, Bosco was released when the main witness in the case, Sammy Gravino, was deemed unreliable. Bosco returned to his native Serbia, where he opened a casino nightclub until he died in 2011 from poor health. Yeah, those European countries get a lot of death by poor health. Usually lead poisoning. In 1992, a man from a man named Brian Bentley was identified as a member of the Westies and is implicated in a burglary ring responsible in victimizing 1,000 businesses throughout Manhattan. When Michael G. Chertsky, Chief Investigative Division of the District Attorney's Office, was asked how much still remained of the Westies, he said, too much, and it's not the end of the game. In the 21st century, for more than two decades following the end of the Yuga era, there was little mention of the activities of even continued existence of the Westies. But in 2012, the New York Post reported that the Westies resurfaced under the leader of John Bocoon.
John Bocoon.
who was caught along with his accomplice smuggling marijuana into the United States. The New York Times noted that aside from being the nephew of former Westy Buchan, had no connection to any group using that name. However, the Westies is still a title created by members of the press in the mid-80s to refer to a gang. As a point out by English, at no point did members of the Westies ever adopt the label referred to themselves as such. So I guess the Westies are pretty much dead in New York, which I don't know. It's kind of like a relief when you see that.
I don't think they're dead. I just read something where the main guy of the Westies was appealing to get out of jail before I went to this.
Like I just said, is a lot of the they use that term for gangs in that area as the Westies.
It was just a media name for
people. It's just an adopted label. So it
gang's gone. It's just they don't call themselves that.
Yeah, but yeah, it's like I went to Vegas and I was visiting a friend when I was still in the military. I went to go visit her and friends I made when I was overseas because I've never been to Vegas as a person that's going to Vegas, going to the casinos and whatnot. And you get that tax-free money when you're overseas. So I had a shit ton of money I could blow. And what's strange about it, I was watching the news and there's a lot of gang stuff that was mafia stuff that was happening. I was like, this is 2000, you're still having problems with the mafia? And she's like, yeah, it's Vegas. It's going to happen.
It's money.
I was like, I think that they, I think it was some kind of racketeering job or some shit like that, but it was something stupid. But anyways, thank you, Kenny, for coming on and help me out with this stuff.
I'm glad I did nothing.
Yeah. Well, we had a good conversation about the sublime of serial killers and what makes up a serial killer, which we should go over with other. Well,
everything I Google, it doesn't lead back to anything. Pyramid head of orchestrated serial killings, but
I don't know. That might be one of our next topics that we will research and figure out. I might get someone else to come in that's a law enforcement variety and see if he can help us out with that. But anyways, thank you all for listening. Thank you all for watching. It's a pleasure to talk to everybody that come across in the comments and everything. Thank you very much for doing that. And goodbye.
Ta-ta.